suggestions of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
Good morning. You may be seated. First case on our calendar is 00-12-19, State of Ohio versus Leslie James Johnson. Ms. O'Halloran.
If it may please the court, I'm Jan O'Halloran. I'm from the Mahoney County Prosecutor's Office. At the heart of this case is the definition of aiding and abetting under Ohio's complicity statute. But also at the heart of this case is street justice and gang justice. This court cannot permit this kind of justice to prevail. This case, as I'm sure you're all aware, involves a gang-related retaliatory shooting. 3-year-old Jessica Ballou was murdered, and 3 other innocent people were shot. This court has to consider that this is not an isolated instance. One single defendant did not go out and commit this atrocity. You have to look at this case in the context of strength and numbers. Sidney Cornwell shot the victims. The defendant, Leslie Johnson, sat beside Sidney Cornwell in the car when this shooting occurred. The appellant, or the appellee, the defendant, and the appellate court both viewed the defendant's presence as the defendant's actions as mere presence. It's the state's contention that this case, the facts, and the law dictate otherwise. If I may digress for a second, I would like to reserve 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. I ask this court on behalf of the state to reverse the appellate court's decision and to reinstate the conviction of Leslie Johnson from the trial court. This defendant was indicted under complicity for aiding and abetting. The facts demonstrate this defendant was present when Boom, Edward Miles, showed disrespect for the Crips gang. The defendant was a Crips gang member. Edward Miles was a Bloods gang member. The record reflects that the defendant was present when Boom shot at the Crips gang. He wounded a Crips gang member by the name of Ed Magaha. The evidence also shows that this defendant was present during the time that the group got together to plan their retaliation. The testimony showed that all the gang members were down with it. And what does that mean in gang lingo? That means they were all in agreement. Edward Magaha testified. Everybody there was in agreement with it. As he said, they were down with it.
And had he been charged with conspiracy here, we might not have a real debate, but
He was charged under aiding and abetting, but doesn't participation in a conspiracy constitute aiding and abetting?
That's a theory you're advancing.
It certainly is. Because I would concur that perhaps not in all cases that would work that way, but under the specific facts of this case, it does.
What would be the purpose of having a separate conspiracy statute then?
You mean under complicity?
Yes.
I suppose, it gives the state the option to charge under that. The purpose of having a separate one would be to cover all bases. That if you've got a defendant who merely sits back and plans and doesn't actively seek any other role in it, you perhaps would have a conviction there for complicity under conspiracy. In this case, I think this is one of those kinds of situations where either or both would work. The other thing, I have cited some cases in my brief. The appellate courts that have dealt with the issue appear to be saying you could indict under that the facts in those particular cases could be either or both. It's a theory that I'm certainly presenting to this court, but it's not a brand new theory. The courts have looked at that, and that's the language that they have cited. I mean, I've cited those in my brief.
With all the other things available to the prosecution, why did you do just the aiding and abetting? For instance, you could have charged him with complicity based on the involvement in that conspiracy.
Right,
you could have charged him with aggravated murder or attempted aggravated murder. and yet you chose this specific section that requires an additional act, the Court of Appeals said. Why'd you do that?
I wish I could say to you that I was the one that chose to indict him in that manner. This man was indicted under the prior administration. Paul Gaines is now the prosecuting attorney in Mahoney County. James Filomena was the prosecuting attorney when this case was indicted. His administration indicted and tried it. As to why they selected that,
that's
my guess...
That's a reasonable explanation, and I understand that. But when you say to us, this little girl was killed, these gangs are running loose, and you all have to do something about it. We have to do what the law says, don't we? Just because your office didn't doesn't mean that we should correct that.
And I wouldn't say, which is why you didn't see any of that in the brief, because I would definitely agree with you. I think we are all bound by the terms of the law, and I think that the evidence in this case amply demonstrates it. I think that they chose to indict him under the specific statute that they did, and I think the facts do support it. It's my position, it was their position at trial, and it's my position before this court that Leslie Johnson did take sufficient actions to aid and abet. As I pointed out throughout the brief, you have to look at this with strength in numbers. This isn't the kind of a situation where you've got one person deciding he's going to do something. Every time Leslie Johnson got into that stolen car with armed gang members, he knew what the plan was. He knew they had guns. Of course he knew it was a stolen car. They have a plan. They know exactly what they were going to do. They repeated it over and over again. What are we going to do? We're going to hunt, shoot, and kill, boom, this Edward Miles. That's what they were doing. He did aid and abet. He indicated his assent to the plan right before the shooting. There's eight men in three separate cars. Right before the shooting, they go up to Oak Park Lane. They stop the cars again. They get out, and at that point, they all talk about the plan. That's aiding and abetting. The transcript does show that all eight men, including Leslie Johnson, participated in the discussions at that point. What are they talking about? How best to go about attacking this apartment? The conversation revolved around kicking in the door. They decided that's not the way to do it. That's aiding and abetting. You know, he's helping them decide the plan to take. That's what they know is going to occur.
Is there a special section in the code for aiding and abetting, or does it in fact come under the conspiracy section?
There's a special section under complicity. It's 29-23-03. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if that's what you're asking, but that's the section that he was indicted under.
03-82.
Yes. The thing that strikes you most importantly when you look to this case is that these eight men are traveling in a three-car caravan over the streets of Youngstown. They take at least an hour, if not longer. They're going from place to place looking for this man. You know, they do get out of the car a couple of times, Leslie Johnson, at no time shows any abandonment of it. I think it's safe to say that he wouldn't have just... It's safe to say that every time he got in the car, he did not abandon this plan. None of them did. They all continued with it. Every time he got in there, you're looking to strengthen numbers. It's pretty intimidating to see a three-car caravan coming by with men, you know, eight men in those cars. You know they're up to no good. They come to this apartment. It has bloods. Graffiti on it. It's obviously not their territory. They're looking for someone. I mean, they expressed their intent, and they certainly did it. The case law through
all. Excuse me. Were all eight men indicted in the same theory?
No, they weren't. The four men in the car were indicted.
You're emphasizing all eight planned it. All eight men in cars. All eight participated. Why weren't all eight indicted?
I wish I had an answer for a specific answer, the one that you're looking for on that. Again, I can indicate that I was not in on the decision there, but I know that the thinking was...
Were people in those cars, did they participate as much as Mr. Johnson, but were not indicted?
They may have been.
They may have been.
The state indicted the four men in the car where the shooting occurred.
So the state just picked at random four of the eight people who you say planned it, participated in it, went over there, helped, encouraged. They picked four out of the eight to indict.
Yes. That is what they did. If you look to some of the case law that I've cited, and actually one of the cases cited by the defendant, State v. Keys, the appellate court in that case inferred participation. The appellate court looked at that case and said, well, wait a minute, you can infer what's going on here, that there was evidence, in that case it was a woman and her son, they were fighting over catfish, and in that case the woman leaves the apartment where the guy was supposed to clean the catfish, goes back out, gets her son, and comes back in, and then claims surprise when he accosts the person in the house that was supposed to clean the catfish. And the court in that case looked to that and said, you can infer some of her actions. You can infer that what she is doing is inciting him and aiding him and abetting him and encouraging him. And that's what is going on in this case. You've got what's going on in this particular car. The other two cars that were involved drove past the apartment first. They slowed down, they looked, and they kept going. And that's the reason the state didn't indict them. And if you look into specifics, up until that point, things are all the same. But at that point, the first two cars, they slow down, they don't see who they're looking for, they drive by. The third car doesn't.
Is there any doubt that Johnson didn't actually fire the gun?
Sidney Cornwell fired the gun.
So there's one person in the one car fired the gun?
Yes.
And was Johnson in the car?
Yes, he was.
With the shooter?
Right. He was sitting right beside Sidney Cornwell, who was the shooter. And I know what the defense is going to complain, and they have, that Damian Williams, who sat in the front seat of the car, did have a gun. But he was indicted, but the state did give him a plea bargain in response for his willingness to testify. And again, that comes down to prosecutorial discretion. The prosecutor has to have that discretion. The situation that we have with this case is that he's the only actual, there was another witness who said they saw Sidney Cornwell be the shooter. He was up on the porch when this happened. This Damian Williams provided an actual eyewitness to the shootings. And in return for that, he did get a plea bargain. He got the deal, as I'm sure anyone would describe it, he got the deal of his life. But as I'm sure you're all aware, sometimes the state is in that position. You don't necessarily have crimes occurring in front of stellar witnesses. Very seldom does that happen, and the state was forced to do this. Damian Williams was the first one willing to come forward, the first one willing to make a statement, the first one willing to talk about what was going on. The state had no choice at that point. You have to take what you can get in order to bring about the best justice that you can under the circumstances, and that is what happened. I think it's an interesting point that in that issue wasn't raised on appeal. The defense didn't raise that issue. He didn't complain, well, wait a minute, this is unfair, it's selective prosecution, it's any of that. None of those arguments were raised on appeal.
It's your contention, is it not, that being in the group, even if he said nothing while it was being planned, and if he got in the car and drove with them to the scene, even if he did nothing else, negates the statement in the Court of Appeals opinion that says the record in this case fails to demonstrate that appellant aided or abetted Cromwell in his criminal act. Without any overt act, you say that's enough to aid and abet.
What I'm saying is that
I agree. I just want to know what you think.
What I'm saying is that there's more to it than just that. The appellate court relied on State v. Sims, but the facts are abundantly clear in that case. In that case, the defendant was in the car 30 seconds, and there wasn't any testimony about the prior planning, about the prior participation. There was nothing. In this case, you have more than just that. He was present in the car, but he was also present during all the discussions and all of the...
Well, the appellee contends that he didn't participate in any of those conversations, that he didn't make any overt statements. Is that correct?
And I will agree with him to a certain extent that the evidence is awfully thin, but I would also point out that there is testimony in the transcript that says that at Oak Park Lane, right before the shooting, that the testimony was that all eight men participated in the discussions of how to go about doing it. So he was participating in the discussions. You know, there's references in this to it that there's not a great deal of time that's required, you know, not a great deal of conversation that's required, but they all knew what the situation was. If I may, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, unless you have some other questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Halloran.
Before you sit down, sir, which witness do you say said that he participated in the discussion? Because I didn't think it was Bunkley, and I didn't think it was...
I know the transcript.
Williams. Williams said he stated no conversation had occurred at Harvey's house about anything in particular.
I know the transcript page is 182.
Okay. And who would have said that?
That's what I was going to go look in my notes while Mr. Miles is addressing you. I can get the name for you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. O'Halloran. Mr. Miles.
Mr. Chief Justice, Justices of this Honorable Court, my name is Sherman Miles, and I represent the appellee, Leslie Johnson, in this case. First, I want to correct some, I believe, are inaccuracies that were put forth by the appellant. The testimony and the record in this case show that Leslie Johnson did not make one single statement the whole evening. The estate talked about a discussion prior to the shooting. However, Damian Williams states on page 223 of the transcript that he could not say for sure who said what in that conversation. Bunkley admits on pages 336 to 338 that he cannot point to one single statement made by Leslie Johnson that evening. And Edward Magaha on pages 408 through 410 states that Leslie Johnson made no statement until after the shooting, when he stated how very upset and angry he was at Sidney Cornwell for the shooting. Also, the as you know, the state pointed out, Damian Williams, who was in the car and had a firearm on him, was indicted for these crimes, but was let go without one single day in prison. As far as the other four in the car, if the state is proceeding on this theory that if there's a conspiracy, you're responsible for all the natural consequent and probable consequences as required in Lockett, then the four in the other car should have been indicted.
Couldn't the jury draw an inference from those comments? They're not comments that he said nothing. Mm-hmm. It's, I don't know who said what. Mm-hmm. Juries can then look at the setting and look at the fact that everybody's planning a revenge murder and draw the inference that he was part of it. And that's what we let juries do, mm-hmm. isn't it? Why should the Court of Appeals substitute its judgment for drawing a negative inference out of it when the jury drew obviously a positive inference out of the testimony?
Well, as the Court of Appeals, in considering the evidence, determined that the case should not have even have gone to a jury, that the case was so weak that this should not have been a case that should have gone to a jury in the first place, that there was not legally sufficient evidence, and based on the fact that the state could not point to one single statement or act by Leslie Johnson that entire day and evening. So I would say that because this case shouldn't have even gone to a jury in the first place.
But to get there, as I read their Court of Appeals opinion, mm-hmm. they have to draw very different inferences than the jury obviously drew, and that's not a sufficiency argument. That's a manifest weight argument, in my opinion. And they don't have a majority on the Court of Appeals. They had a split decision on that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it was a 2-1 decision, which is what is all that's required for a legal sufficiency decision. And the court found that there was not adequate evidence as a standard that was put forth by this court in the case of Tompkins, excuse me. Also, as far as the Keyes case, the reason why I cited this case is the fact that the Court of Appeals in that case specifically stated that Karen Keyes was not an aider and abettor until she came back a second time with her son with her own firearm. And as far as the Sims case, the critical thing is that Sims stated the women passengers knew nothing about this, indicating he had knowledge of whatever the of any crimes that the driver is going to commit, but the Sims court still found that there was not, that mere presence as a passenger in a car is not sufficient for aiding and abetting of a crime.
Let's concede that for purposes of argument. Would you concede on the other side that when Mr. Williams testified that he said they had a general discussion about kicking in the door?
Mm-hmm. He stated that there was a discussion, but he did not point to any single statement that Leslie Johnson made.
He said the group discussed kicking in the door. I agree that the other two said that he didn't incite anybody, and he didn't try to stop them either from shooting. Mm-hmm. But you're only looking for one overt act, mm-hmm. and if it can be construed, as Justice Stratton indicated, by the jury, that he was involved in aiding and abetting simply because he engaged in conversation of kicking in the door, mm-hmm. isn't that enough? But what resulted from the kicking in the door, mm-hmm. or the plan to kick in the door, were the murders.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Your Honor, with all due respect, the fact that Leslie Johnson did not participate in these discussions and Damien Williams cannot point to one statement that anyone said, including any by Leslie Johnson, it still leaves Leslie Johnson as a passenger in the vehicle. And as far as whether he got out of the vehicle, it was stated by Damien Williams on page 224 that not everyone got out of the vehicle at that point. He could not say for sure who did and who didn't.
Was there any testimony or suggestion that in a gang-related crime such as this was, that having several people in cars and the defendant was in the lead car, that somehow offers some sort of protection to the person who's going to commit the crime, and that that's therefore an element of aiding and abetting?
Mm-hmm. It was discussed that, obviously it was discussed at the trial that this involved gang members. I apologize, I'm not sure I quite understand your question, Mr. Chief Justice.
Well, if someone is going to do a drive-by shooting,
mm-hmm.
it may not be as important to them to have some help, to have some people in the car with them. If there's a gang dispute going on here, as this was,
mm-hmm.
It may be more important to those who are going to commit the crime, or the person who's actually going to do the shooting, to have somebody, have people with him in case there's resistance by the gang members. I mean, was that not explored or not mentioned at all in the trial?
Actually, the fact that they were gang members was discussed. As far as the whether or not Mr. Johnson was a gang member, it still comes back to the point that he was only a passenger in a car.
Well, my point is his being a passenger in the car, mm-hmm. could offer some aid to the person who's going to do the shooting, because we may get in trouble. We're going to go shoot somebody because they've done something to one of our gang members, and so we're going to get even with them.
Mm-hmm.
It would seem to me that somebody's going to do that, it may want to have some help,
mm-hmm.
just in case he gets into a war or mm-hmm. a shootout.
Mm-hmm.
That's my point, I guess, but I guess it wasn't explored, so I was just curious whether that's
yeah.
an element.
Yeah, and the state pointed out in their brief that there are now, for lack of a better term, gang RICO statutes in Ohio, but there was not any back in 1996 when this crime occurred.
Under your theory, and what the Court of Appeals seems to say, is if you're a member of a gang planning a revenge, and you sit and listen to all the plotting and planning, and you get in the lead car and go off with this caravan of stolen cars, and the lead gang member in your car shoots somebody up, as long as you keep your mouth shut, you can't be found guilty of aiding and abetting. That's
mm-hmm.
pretty much what they said, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. They said that unless there's some overt act, some statement encouraging the crime.
So they translated overt act into he had to physically say something rather than looking at his actions.
Mm-hmm. Physically say something or some act like driving the motor vehicle, which the Court of Appeals affirmed the life sentence of Stoudemire, the driver, based on the fact that as the driver of the automobile, he further and affected, furthered and affected the transportation, but Leslie Johnson, as a mere passenger in the car, did nothing to further encourage the crime. And the fact that Mr. Johnson did not have a firearm on him was another also evidence of no overt act further affecting the crime involved.
Counsel,
yes.
Is there any offense for which your client could have been appropriately convicted?
Okay. Well, the Court of Appeals...
On the evidence that was presented.
Okay. Well, the Court of Appeals states that there may have been sufficient evidence for a conspiracy conviction. However, they could not obviously make legal or factual findings that there was a conspiracy because that's not what he was charged with. And since, and under the independent conspiracy statute requires not just an overt act but a substantial overt act, I would say even if he had been charged under the conspiracy complicity statute, the fact that he committed no overt act and certainly no substantial overt act as found determined by the 7th District, that he would not have been convicted of that either.
Doesn't the fact of that this case involves a gang
mm-hmm.
make it difference, distinguishes it from other case law that we're relying upon,
mm-hmm.
That there's no way that this defendant could be an innocent bystander.
Mm-hmm.
He's part of a gang. He knew these cars were stolen. He's in mm-hmm. the lead car. All of those things the jury
mm-hmm.
was permitted to take into consideration when making their determination.
Mm-hmm. I would argue, with all due respect, Justice Resnick, that whether you're a gang member or not is has some relevance, but not great relevance. Anyone who's involved knowing someone's about to commit a crime would still have the same amount of possible...
You don't see any difference if this was just a situation of some people getting together, going to kill someone, one person said or a number of people said,
mm-hmm.
and the fact that they're a gang, you don't see any difference in that, that all these members were gang members.
Mm. No, I don't, Your Honor. If people are discussing murder, I think whether you're a gang member or not, you have to look at an overt act.
Counsel, following up on what Chief Justice Moyer asked you, the folks in the other cars were not prosecuted or indicted?
No, Your Honor.
Okay. I'm wondering, if they go out in three cars as they did here, that, and I don't know, I guess a drive-by wasn't initially contemplated, was it?
No, it was not, Your Honor.
Just get this guy.
Mm-hmm.
But say you were contemplating, we're just going to go out and shoot up a neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't the drivers, at least the drivers of the other cars, say the guns are only in one car, the two more cars are there providing cover and confusion
mm-hmm.
so that it's difficult for the neighbors to have, you know, to get straight where mm-hmm. these shots came from, because
mm-hmm.
there's three cars maybe jumping around each other and that kind of thing.
Right.
Wouldn't that be an active participation in the act of doing what happened here?
If the individuals in any of the cars committed some overt act, certainly the drivers of all the cars help further the act of this crime by, as you said, having additional cars there, which could cause confusion. And frankly, the testimony talks about common sense understanding, not necessarily a lot of discussions, at least at Heavy's house before they left. And I would say that...
So what is the state of the record on what the plan was? What was the plan? As the record reflects it.
Okay. The record reflects that there was a discussion, kind of not necessarily a discussion, but a common sense understanding that that there should be revenge against Boom, but not not any actual plan formulated. And that's and again, the fact that there is no plan formulated again helps establish that Leslie Johnson, by not discussing, was not aware of.
And was there a discussion of the specific location where they expected to find him?
Basically, we were driving around looking for him. I see that my white light is on. Unless there are other questions, if I may wrap up.
If they had located and shot Boom, mm-hmm. same scenario, three cars, your defendant, your client's a passenger in the first car, the driver shoots Boom, finds Boom and shoots Boom. Do we have any different scenario? Your guy still gets off because he didn't make a statement?
Yes, because the fact that he, under the appellate cases I cited, unless there's some overt act that is that's required to be constituted aiding and abetting. Smith says if you're a passenger in a car and you know that the driver is going to commit a legal act and you approve of it and do nothing to stop it, that's not sufficient to constitute aiding and abetting. And so whether it was Boom or the individual of this department would not have made any difference in my opinion.
The Court of Appeals, in its opinion, said that the defendant was attacked in the earlier attack. Was he injured? Do we know? Does the record indicate, was he injured in the attack by the Bloods? Yeah, I forget which name.
Yeah, no, I don't believe he was, Your Honor. It was Magaha who was injured.
Right. So, okay, he was attacked, but not. We don't know what that means, I guess.
No.
The Court of Appeals says he was attacked.
Right. My red light is on. If I may have a minute just to wrap up.
Yes.
Thank
very
you.
Quickly.
Thank you. Okay. As I said, the Seventh District found there was no overt act to constitute aiding and abetting. In fact, not even a, let alone a substantial overt act would be required to prove conspiracy. Now the Simpson-Smith cases, merely being a passenger in a car in mere presence cannot make you an aider and abetter. The state chose only to charge Mr. Johnson with aiding and abetting, and the record shows no actions or words by Mr. Johnson to constitute aiding and abetting in this case. And as far as, just briefly, issue of whether the state
should... You've summed up.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. O'Halloran, you've saved a minute of your time. Rebuttal.
Counsel, is there anything in the record indicating that the tragic events that unfolded were ever planned or discussed?
Yes, there is. I mean, they, as far as the specifics of they would drive by and shoot and, you know,
shoot
gunfire.
Shoot up some folks on a front porch.
As far as those specifics, no, but the record is abundantly clear that the plan was to find this man, to shoot him, and to kill him.
All right,
they
I
knew
understand
that.
And then following up on Justice Stratton's question, wouldn't that be a good deal stronger case against this guy if that's the plan that was discussed was the plan that was carried out? Because, I mean, you're looping him in because he's in the discussions, but what actually happened here, I take it, was never discussed.
The specifics were never discussed. The end result was certainly discussed,
shooting innocent folks unconnected to this individual?
Right, but as you well know, I mean, there
was that discussed?
Apparently not. But they are liable, or this man is liable for the reasonable, probable consequences of what was happening. They were getting angrier and angrier. They knew what they wanted to do. They wanted to shoot. They wanted to kill. It's an end result of what occurred. So I would argue that in comparison.
Was the jury given any reason to conclude that the defendant's overt act here was riding in the car with the person who did the shooting, and that that gave, again, this is a gang war, gang feud, that it's different than another type of crime where, take the drive-by shooting where some innocent person, this turns out looks like it is, but it wasn't, we know it was planned differently. I'm wondering why that isn't the overt act, that in a gang feud where you know there may be fire coming back at you, there were three carloads. I'm sure there were three carloads, I would guess, because they all wanted to, they were going to get revenge. They were mad. They'd been attacked by the other gang, and so they were going to go have it out with them. Why is somebody riding in the lead car with the shooter, why is that not an overt act to carry out the act that was planned?
Well,
was that argued at all to the...
I don't know if that... I know that what was argued to the jury was the strength in numbers concept, the fact that was the point. I mean, I know there were some references, some analogies made to the jury about one stick, two sticks, you know, the whole thing. I mean, those were arguments that were made to the jury.
But it doesn't fit if the others were not indicted. I don't want to get into indictments because you had nothing to do with that. We'll never know why the indictments weren't made or were made. But so that was argued as...
Yes, it was. The whole strength in numbers concept, the very fact, and what I've been arguing to this court...
I think the Chief Justice is saying that isn't there a difference when this individual was in the lead car riding with the shooter? Isn't that different from the other two cars?
Well, I think in this situation it is, because the other two cars did go by. But this car did not. You know, and arguably they talked about the things ahead of time. So I think it does. Each, you know, I would hesitate to set forth a general rule. Well, if you're in this car, this is what happens. I think you do have to look to the specific.
Those are facts that the jury could take into consideration.
Definitely. And I think that's what the jury did take into consideration. I see my red light is on. I would just like to thank you for your time, and I would ask that this court closely look at this case. This is obviously a very important case to Mahoning County. We would ask that you reverse the decision by the appellate court and affirm Mr. Johnson's conviction.
Thank you, Ms. O'Halloran. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.